Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready? Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
All right. Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage podcast. We are on podcast number 14. Woohoo! That's really exciting. And I am here with international marriage expert today, Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. I was just telling you, you know, even though I'm having some problems with my voice, but I'm still doing well nonetheless. Thanks, Heather. How are you doing?
We appreciate you being here. I am really excited. Tomorrow we go in for our ultrasound and find out the gender of our eighth baby.
Yeah.
I am not someone that can wait.
I don't know how you can even manage that. I mean, I came from a family of eight, but even trying to manage five myself is a challenge. So, you know, good luck with that.
Oh, we're so excited. And we like to surprise the kids and kind of do, like, I know the gender reveal party is a big fad right now, I guess. But I always want to know, like, during the ultrasound. And so we're going to make a big cake and then hide a blue or pink jelly bean in there and then have the kids dig through it to find out what their sibling is. So that's going to be super fun. Yeah, so that's exciting. And what else is exciting is our topic today. So let's get to that. Today we're talking about building a foundation to get your spouse back. And this goes right along with stage one of our PATH method. Now, if you aren't familiar with the PATH method, because we have new people joining us every single day, then we really encourage you to go back and listen to podcast one. You can find it on iTunes, Spotify, or directly here in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group, as well as our YouTube channel. So multitude ways that you can find us. And go back and get that foundation of what our PATH method really is. And what I love about this topic today that Mark and I are going to share with you is all about creating a really strong foundation. And Mark even put this here, that we as a company, we like to avoid gimmicky strategies, right? Sometimes you see these really gimmicky things out there, like convince her to come back in three easy steps, or like how to get them to dump their mistress or whatever, right? And what we really want to do, what we teach our members, we teach our students and our clients, is how to build truly lasting relationships. We aren't about quick fixes or quick change that's just temporary, or any kind of manipulation tactic that you might hear some other people talking about out there. That, yeah, it might work short term, but it isn't going to last long term. We really want to help you have a healthy and a thriving relationship long term and have lasting results. And we're going to show you how to get there today, even if you might be in a marriage crisis right now. So today we want to talk to you about what kind of foundation is necessary to be able to support your spouse coming back to you. Before we get to that, I'm going to go to our client win of the week. This one comes from another gentleman named Mark. He is one of a member of our online program, and he updated us on how things are going on now with his relationship with his wife. And he's posted in the past, and there have been some really big wins and then some really tough challenges having his spouse go through what we call the teeter-totter effect. Kind of that back and forth of, I want to be with you, now I'm afraid, and the ups and downs of this part of the cycle, right? This part of the stage of getting your spouse back. And that feeling kind of like going back to square one whenever you hit a major obstacle. And I know a lot of you in the group here have talked about this. I talked about how frustrating it is and how hard it is. And we always go back to being consistent. And so after not hearing from him for a little while, he just shared that things are now going consistently well and that he and his wife are focusing on mending their relationship. So in Mark's own words, he said, I just wanted to update everyone here and say things are going well. I truly feel that if it wasn't for this program, things may have turned out very differently. So don't give up. We appreciate your encouragement, Mark, to everyone out there that might be in that teeter-totter effect and at any stage in reconciling with their spouse and restoring their marriage, and want to shout out a big high thrive to you. So without further ado, Mark, let's jump into this. Mark here, our client win of the week, has been implementing this exact method that we're going to share today and helping him to reconnect with his wife and restore their relationship. So let's go over what the three foundations for healing are and just maybe a brief overview of what the four behaviors that tear those foundations down.
Yeah, so when we're talking about building a foundation, I like to think of, okay, what is actually needed to have a healthy relationship? You know, what do you actually need? It's beyond the specific action steps that you need to take or the specific words that you need to say. This is like, what is really foundational to a relationship that can allow something to heal? I've been talking about this a little bit more recently with our own clients, you know, this concept right here. And I like to give credit where credit is due. I'm actually pulling this concept here from a man named Carl Rogers, but he was applying it in a very different sort of context. Carl Rogers is very famous in the world of psychology. He actually was the founder of the humanistic approach to psychology, which is kind of an approach that's just, it's a little bit more warm, a little bit more fuzzy, saying, you know, if you're really there, as a therapist, you know, emotionally for the client, it's a much better, I'm going to be honest, it's not one that I studied very closely, but I do like a lot of Carl Rogers' assertions specifically. And so he kind of said, hey, if you want to have an environment for change, you need these three things. And when I was looking at this, this was a long time ago, you know, I was reminded when I was studying some other things not too long ago, I'm saying these three foundations are essential for a therapeutic environment, but really they're needed for a marriage sort of relationship or a deep relationship. If you really want to get anywhere, if you really want to be able to heal or to even have a healthy relationship to begin with, there's a lot of overlap there. And I always like finding those kind of crossovers where, you know, there's truth in this here, this area here, like in psychology, but it applies really well to other areas as well. And I thought it fit really well here. So his three, he would call it three conditions, three, in this case, you know, I'm talking about three foundations for the marriage, but the three foundations were one for empathy and understanding, basically an ability to see things deeply from the other person's point of view. Now, the second one, Carl Rogers, he called it congruence, but it's because of a lot of other aspects of his own theories. But, you know, essentially it's about authenticity and whether how open you can be, how able you are to be your true self. Like, so are you able to be open with your deeply held desires or concerns? I know I meet with a lot of people who either they themselves have been putting down their own needs or their spouse has, in order to sacrifice for the relationship, and it causes a ton of problems. And to heal, you need to be able to have that openness. The other piece was, Heather, you and I kind of talk about this a lot in terms of having understanding, but the third condition was, Carl Rogers calls it unconditional positive regard. Basically being able to see your partner and the positive qualities that they have no matter what the circumstance. Now I'm gonna cross these three conditions with another great person in the realm of relationships. And I've had a mind fart here where I can't recall, why can't I recall the name? I've even talked about this. Dr. John Gottman, of course. He talked about things that can pretty accurately predict divorce. And what I noticed with the crossover is that these four things specifically work against these three foundations that we just talked about. And the four, Dr. Gottman calls these the four horsemen of divorce, which are criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. Or basically finding fault with your partner's character, demonstrations or blatant demonstrations of open disrespect, tuning out the other person in order to defend yourself and really shutting your other the other person out. So Heather, with this explanation, I wanted to give this explanation first so that everyone is on the same page. We all know what we're talking about here. But I want to ask you, Heather, what have you seen in your own marriage regarding these foundations, these conditions, as Carl Roger might put it?
Right. So we talk about like healing and health, right, of a relationship. And you and Jennifer last week so beautifully shared what you do to maintain a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. And the first one that stands out to me, of course, is the empathy and understanding, which goes right along with our PATH method, the P standing for perspective. It's gaining understanding and insight into your partner's, your spouse's experience and why they're doing what they're doing, what's motivating them, what's the reasons justifying why they're doing what they're doing, if they want to leave, what's going on there. And so this goes a little bit deeper into perspective and having that empathy and understanding. Now, I'm going to just give a really quick example of how this looks like in my relationship from yesterday, like not even 24 hours ago. I had an opportunity, I guess, to demonstrate and use some empathy and understanding. It was Labor Day, and so we decided to take the kids to Red Rocks. Not Red Rocks, sorry, Garden of the Gods. They're huge red rocks. If you've ever been there, the same thing. But it's not the same place as Red Rocks. So Garden of the Gods. And we were there with all of our children, and afterwards, it was really, really hot. It was like 99, 98 degrees the whole time. The sun's just beating down on us. So we're like, okay, let's go take the kids, get some lunch. Well, my 10-year-old son decided he'd rather play on his Nintendo than come inside and get some lunch with us. And this created a difference of opinion between my husband and I on parentally how we should handle the situation. And in the past, it would be very easy to let this kind of difference of opinion escalate in a story in my mind that he thinks he's always right. He doesn't really care. He's not listening to me, right? And I would have let it get to a really nasty place very quickly because of negative interpretations of one another and misjudgments of one another and kind of the cycle that we were in. And I felt a little bit of that starting to come up. However, you know, Mark and I, we live what we teach. And so I said, is there another way of looking at this? And what is he really wanting? My husband, right? Is he wanting to fight, right? Is that his intention? Or what is he really wanting? And when I realized that our goals are the same, we talk about, you know, having common goals and pathway thoughts and those things. We're not going to go deep into that today, but I realized that our goal is the same. We both want a positive outcome with our son. We both want to teach him good lessons and good principles, and we want to be able to support one another. And when I realized that we both have the same goal, even though we're going about it in what seems like opposite ways, then I'm able to show compassion for him and have understanding of where he's really coming from. So instead of creating a story in my mind that, oh, he thinks he knows everything and he doesn't listen to me and whatever, I'm realizing we actually have the same goal here. So let's work together on it as a team. So little instances like that helps bridge the gap between us in our day-to-day lives. And without that foundation, it could get really ugly really fast.
Yeah, I know last week, Jen and I were talking about, and you mentioned this a little bit ago, how important of a skill it is to be able to quickly repair any amount of damage done. And Jen and I were kind of talking about how this is a bit of our superpower. We might have arguments here and there, but we're always very quick to repair things. And I think one of the reasons why we're able to do this so well is that third foundation that I talked about, is because I might be mad at Jen in the moment, but at some point I can kind of flip a switch and I can say, and you talked about this with Ben too, but how you're able to do this with Ben. But at some point I can say, you know what, Jen is honestly, you know, trying to do her best. She's a really good person. She's probably trying to make things good right here in the moment, like where I have that positive regard for her, even if I'm angry at her. And I, you know, you were describing it in terms of empathy. I think it's very similar. It's a fine line between demonstrating empathy and regarding the other person positively. But, you know, I can see each one of these things, you know, in my own marriage. And the reason why we're able to have such a positive connection is because of these three things. We have that empathy. I always feel like I can say whatever I need to say to Jen, and I know that she's going to view me with, you know, a lot of respect and a lot of positive regard, and vice versa. So, you know, I don't think, Heather, that you and I, in our own respective relationships, I don't think it's 100% unique or anything. Actually, I think a lot of marriages probably start out with these three foundations. Otherwise, I don't think that many marriages would really have that happen. If there was a lot of criticism and contempt and those other things within a relationship, it wouldn't really go anywhere. So what do you think happens, you know, after this honeymoon period? What do you think really makes it, you know, gets in the way? Or why do you think these foundations fade away?
Yeah, before we get to that, I just want to go a little bit deeper into what you just said. Okay. About the at the beginning of a relationship, how these things are really strong. And maybe some of you feel like that's so far distant, but I want you to go back and remember, did I have a positive regard towards this other person? Did they generally have a positive regard towards me? And if something happened that maybe wasn't positive, we were probably really quick to turn it around and be like, oh, they didn't mean it, or I probably misunderstood. And our regard for them is something that's very, very positive, right? We feel like we can be our true self. If we wouldn't fall in love with someone or have that honeymoon state at all if we didn't feel like we could be our true self, right? Mm-hmm. That would be a shaky foundation, and we wouldn't be willing to make that kind of commitment of marriage if that wasn't the case. And so at some point we had these things. We had more empathy and understanding for each other. We had a positive regard for each other. We were looking for the better qualities, like the positive qualities in one another, right? No matter what the circumstances were. And we had that openness, that ability to be our true, genuine selves. So where does that go? That's a fabulous question. Why don't you share with us the four horsemen of divorce? Because I think that's going to answer that question better than any rambling.
Yeah, no, we went over this briefly, but I don't think anyone like goes into it thinking, you know, I'm going to do this to eat away at my marriage. You know, a lot of these little things. So once again, the four horsemen being criticism, contempt, defensiveness, or stonewalling. You know, each of those probably feels, you know, I don't know if I would say right, but feels justified in a moment. And I think that, you know, as we, as people let those things, those behaviors creep into their marriage, it just becomes a little bit more commonplace. People get a little bit more comfortable with each other. And then it just kind of turns into almost like a self-feeding loop or pattern, to where, you know, criticism might come out and then becomes really easy to meet that with defensiveness, or to meet that with your own criticism, or something else. Or as you keep sacrificing for the relationship, and you start building up this resentment because you're not being true to yourself, you're not being open about some of your concerns, that contempt starts filling in there, and it becomes easy to pull away from some of those other foundations. I honestly think that, you know, of course, no one means to get to this place. And I also think it's really almost insidious. It's just like how slowly it all creeps in and how it becomes normal over a long period of time, which is I don't know. It's almost scary. I know for me myself, it's hard for me to view my own faults and my own problems, as I'm sure it is with anyone. So, you know, I almost feel like I have to be on constant guard at times from some of these things. I don't know. Heather, do you know? Do you have any? I know I myself have some personal friends that have even been having marriage problems recently or in the recent past. I don't know about you. Have you seen any of these things in people that you know?
Right. And personal friends, absolutely. And, you know, Mark and I, we work with people every single day that are in this situation. And I would just encourage everyone to take a really honest look at where your relationship is and figure out which one of these, because I'm sure that there's at least one of them or maybe a slight variation that's going on, right? Is it the criticism? Is it finding fault with your partner's character? Not just what they do, but who they are, right? And vice versa. Are we finding fault with them, who they are? Are they finding fault with us, right? Contempt, demonstration of blatant or open disrespect. Is that's what's going on, right? And then defensiveness, like Mark mentioned, which means like you're just completely, you know, attacking them out of defensiveness or turning what they're saying or feeling, right, in order to defend your side. You're turning around their words, like you're having that negative interpretation going on there, or the stonewalling, shutting your other partner out. Now, we hear a lot of people when their spouse is pulling away that this stonewalling is going on. They just feel shut out. They say, I'm done. I'm not going to work on the relationship. And they feel like it's just a closed door. And they feel completely cut off from the person that they once felt really close to, right? And so, yeah, Mark, this is very common. So it's important to be aware what's going on. And even more importantly, what the deeper issues are that are causing these things to show up in the first place.
I think a big thing here, you know, I want to be aware of who our audience is. You know, most people who are listening to this are probably thinking, okay, well, yeah, of course, I want to build up my relationship. I want to have these foundations in my relationship, and I want to avoid some of these behaviors that can really tear the relationship apart. I don't think, well, you know, of course, there's things that people in our audience need to change. There's always, you know, two sides to every story. But, you know, I think for a large part of this, it's, you know, what do you do if your partner is really unwilling? I think you started to talk about that. What if your partner is unwilling to really work on this, to build up any of these foundations, or to come back from any of these destructive behaviors? So, you know, when I'm asking about this, you know, when I'm working with clients on this, I think a big piece of this, you know, is how do you work on this on your own? And, you know, almost, you know, if I were to check on a client and where they were at with this, you know, a big question that I would want to ask is, especially with that second foundation there, that piece on authenticity, are they doing what's needed to make sure that there is respect within the relationship? Because I think this is an easier area to work on by yourself. There's abilities for you to set boundaries. There's abilities for you to demand respect. But I want to just talk about that for a moment. Is that, what do you think, Heather? Is that really the only area of those three foundations that you can really affect on your own or change in your partner?
I feel like you're asking one of those questions that you want to answer yourself, Mark.
I'm trying to engage in some conversation, Heather, and, you know, trying to make this a collaborative approach, but I can certainly answer it if you
prefer. Go for it.
I working with clients, I hear these sort of things all the time. You know, I guess I am working a little bit more closely with some of our clients than, you know, say Heather might be. So I'm going to be a bit closer to these answers. But I hear these things all the time, this sort of idea like, can I really change my partner? Can I really work on this on my own? And there's almost a certain mindset like where they get into this idea that, okay, sure, I could change myself, but it's not going to really have any impact on my partner. I can't make them care about me. And yes, I'm going to admit to a certain degree that that's true. At the same time, I still think there's a lot that can be done to change the dynamics within a relationship. And one of the things that you and I teach, Heather, is, you know, if you are willing to give first, if you're willing to give that empathy and understanding, if you're willing to see your partner positively, it becomes easier to ask for that sort of thing in return a little bit later. So, you know, like a big thing that we can ask ourselves, you know, and when we are trying to work on this by ourselves, are we doing what we need to do to demonstrate that empathy and understanding? Are we being true to ourselves? Are we setting boundaries for ourselves to make sure that there's respect within the relationship? Are we making sure that we are approaching even disagreements regarding our spouse positively? Now, Heather, I imagine, you know, like that even within your own relationship, you may have experienced this yourself, like where maybe perhaps, and I don't mean to get you into a situation where you're speaking poorly about Ben, that's not my intention, but I'm wondering if there's been a point where you feel like you're not being heard or understood or regarded positively, or feeling like maybe Ben is not being very open, and how you would even approach that, because there's not as much control. I want to kind of speak from experience here.
Yeah, no, Ben and I are really open. And you know what's interesting is that we have strangers come up to us sometimes and they say, "What is it with you two? I've never seen a couple so in love." Like we had a lady at the Y the other day come up to us and be like, "Who are you? Like, you are the strangest, most beautiful couple I've ever seen. You just seem so in love with each other. And I can see all these kids around you and I think they're yours, but you're still so happy. I don't get it, you know?" But no, we're really open about the light and the dark, because there's two sides to both of that, right? You can't really have the light. You can't have the strength if you haven't been through some of those hard times. And so Ben and I are really, you know, strive to be really open to share things that we've learned so that we can help others on their journey as well. And so, yes, I've mentioned before in the podcast, I've shared a little bit about some of the unhealthy cycles that we were in. And it got to a point about 5 years ago where I felt like Ben was closed off to me emotionally. I felt like he was a man of his honor and that he was just kind of going through the motions of being in our marriage and was sticking by me because that's what he felt like was the right thing to do, but that his heart was closed off to me, and that more like intimacy of who he really is wasn't being shared with me. And when I would ask certain questions to try to open that up, stonewall, okay? He had put up some kind of defense mechanism, and I at the time didn't understand why. And it was easy for me to go to, well, he just should be open with me. I want to be open with him, so why isn't he with me? And I would kind of play the victim card, like, isn't this what a marriage is about? Like, shouldn't he just do this? And then I had to realize what I now call, I can articulate it this way, and this is what one of the things we teach is the three areas of control. So Mark, you talked about like that we sometimes feel like we make these positive changes, but it's not going to make any difference with our spouse, right? So the three areas of control, really briefly. So imagine like three circles, right? So we have 100% control, we have influence, and then we have no control. So the 100% of control, these are things that we completely can control. And Mark, you talked about, am I doing these things? Am I being true to myself? Am I setting healthy boundaries, right? Am I still seeing the good positive aspects in my spouse? Am I showing empathy? Am I showing understanding? Those are things we have 100% control over. Then that goes to the next area where we have some influence. And then it goes to the area we have absolutely no control. So no control, yeah, we can't control what our spouse does. However, the things that we do have control over pull over into that middle circle, which is the circle of our influence. And there are things that we don't fully change them, but we can, you know, influence them. And that's what Mark's talking about here, is that we have an incredible ability to influence the dynamic in our relationship. So I'm going to keep it brief, but long story short is that I looked at myself and I realized that there were things I could not control Ben. I could not make him open up. I could not make him stop stonewalling. I couldn't pressure him into it or say that you should do this because you're married to me or because I'm willing to do this for you, right? All I could do was show empathy and understanding that I knew was something I had control over. And I really began to dig deep into, well, why is this happening? And then I had the realization moment that I realized that the negative behavior that I've been engaging in of not knowing how to process my own emotions and how to communicate with him effectively, that I would let things escalate until they blew up so that then they would finally resolve. That was the only way that I had learned how to handle problems in a relationship. And I realized that that habit of mine, that cycle that we both got caught in, because that's where I came from, right? It caused him to just withdraw emotionally and to put up some barriers that he felt he needed to protect himself. And when I finally had that aha moment, then I started to do work, and it is work, and I had to be consistent on increasing that understanding and creating positive experiences and making things safe and comfortable for us both, rewarding the times when he would open up. And that's how we handled that. And so I had to realize that I couldn't ask him to jump from here to there all in one big swoop. I couldn't demand him to do it. And the more I pushed, this is example, right? The more I pushed it, the more he pulled away, which is exactly where many people are at. The more we push, the more we want it, the more we expect it, the more they pull away.
It's almost, Heather, as if really putting into place these three foundations, the empathy and understanding, the making sure that things are open, and that unconditional positive regard, it's almost as if that worked against some of the stonewalling. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about how those things pull those foundations apart, but it also works in reverse. Like in my relationship, and my wife doesn't mind me sharing things, you know, about her. So in my relationship with Jen, I know when we get into some arguments, the tendency for her is to be defensive, because, you know, to be honest, my wife, she puts out a ton of effort. And so if anyone finds some fault with what's going on, it just kind of really bothers her, because she feels like, okay, I put out all this effort and now someone's dissatisfied with my effort here. And there's that defensiveness where she's, and I'm going to be honest, I start feeling like she's not hearing me, because she starts tuning me out in order to defend her own side. So here's a perfect example of where, you know, certainly I have my own faults, and I'll be very open with that at some other points, but here's a perfect example where the defensiveness, the behavior that is not really working for the relationship is not really under my control directly. And, you know, like Heather was talking about, you know, where's our control? Where are we influencing things? What do we have no control? It's not really under my control, but I certainly have influence. Like you were talking about, Heather, where if I know that when Jen gets into that sort of situation where she starts to become defensive, then I need to really double down on my demonstrations of empathy and positive regard towards her. I need to make sure that she feels very well understood, that she knows that I think the world of her. And then it's really easy for us then to bring all that down and to talk about things much more calmly. So even if you're telling us that your spouse stonewalls and will not view you kindly, will not show you any empathy, while we might not have direct control over that, we do have some influence here. I love that idea. So I know this is really hard. This is a really difficult thing to work through. I imagine you've been really struggling with this if you're listening to this podcast right here. So if your partner is currently unwilling to build up any of these foundations, certainly you could listen to this podcast over and over again. I'm going to be a little bit biased. I think it's good material here. But if you're really struggling, I would highly suggest that you book a complimentary call, breakthrough call with us at highthrivecoaching.com/apply to see what more could be done and whether we can support you in any way.
Absolutely. And we have some comments here in the group of some great questions, like, this is where I'm at. Does my not moving out tell her I'm not listening, that I'm pushing? Another one about lawyers here, asking how to deal with the lawyers. She's done with the boyfriend, but she's still not seeing our future. How do I open up communication and have respect? How do I get connection? So all of those questions are fabulous. They are beyond the scope of what we can cover here adequately. And so it's really important that we know your specific situation and exactly what the challenges are in your relationship so that we can guide you best. And that's why we offer that free consultation at High Thrive Coaching.
I do want to touch on this just for a second. So what I'm going to talk about is, you know, each of those questions, what is the theme in that? One is, here is a need that I have. And at the same time, you know, there's some other sort of need that's going on. Like, do I move out when my spouse is asking me to leave, or if there's lawyers involved? And, you know, I can see how it'd be really hard to then, you know, in your mind say, I'm going to give this empathy and positive regard and all this to that action that's going to be directly damaging me. And this is where that third condition is really necessary, where you are where you are being true to yourself, where you are being very open about your own concerns in a way that is still at the same time demonstrating empathy and regarding your spouse positively. And I know it's a really tough balance to work through, it's a really fine line to walk, which is why we have support here. Anyways, I just wanted to touch on that. It's each of these is basically the same question. You know, maybe the approach is going to be slightly different based on the circumstance, but they're all kind of touching on that idea of where do I really talk about my own needs and my own concerns when my spouse's needs and concerns and what they want is so pressing right now.
Thank you, Mark. One final thought before we go to our marriage mythbuster that I feel like I would really like to share, and especially focusing on the things that we can control, is the idea that everything that we're seeking from a relationship and our spouse is actually already found within us. And this is one of the most profound realizations, I guess, I've had in my life, and that's transformed things for me and all of our clients, I would say, as well. And it's taught in every single religion. It's taught in almost every single philosophy. It's just this universal thing. If we're seeking love, if we're seeking acceptance, if we're saying, why don't they appreciate me? No one ever appreciates me. And we're seeking validation for all the things that we're truly wanting. So whatever that is for you, think about what you feel like you're lacking the most in your relationship, whether that's trust, security, patience, understanding, love, you know, whatever that might be. Appreciation is a huge one. If you feel like you're lacking that, then a huge shift will happen for you when you exercise your area of control and realize that that feeling, that need that you have, has to be first found within you. And if you keep trying to seek it in someone else and force it to come from other people, you're only going to push it further away. And so when you get to the point where you realize it's already in me, that feeling of I can appreciate myself, if I'm seeking appreciation from someone else, if I'm seeking validation, if I'm seeking love, if I'm seeking acceptance and gratitude or anything like that out there from this other person, then it really means I've been starving myself, that very thing that I'm seeking. And so where in your life can you give more of that, whatever that is for you, insert the blank, to yourself, then you can be more open to receive it. And then you find yourself being much less needy and desperate to try to get it from someone else because you already have it within you, and you find that you're then able to give it more freely to others. So when we talk about giving authenticity, you know, that you really are true to yourself. You really know who you are. You're living congruent with integrity to that. Then you can invite that into your relationship and attract that with your spouse, right? And when you feel like you have empathy and understanding and a positive regard for yourself, that will only bring about more of that in your relationship. And so exercise that area of your control. If you feel like you are in a state of desperation and seeking it from someone else, know that it's actually within you, and that's where it's always been. It's always been within you. And when you have enough of it for yourself, then it will start to multiply in the external world and in the relationship that you have as well. So let's go to our marriage myth buster, Mark.
Marriage myth buster. So I'm almost combining two myths here. One, you know, about a myth about the beginning of a marriage, and another myth about just really any milestone within a marriage. And I feel like there's a myth, you know, we'll talk about the beginning one, a myth that, okay, once we are married, that's like the finish line. We've made it, and now everything is secure. The other piece that's very similar is, you know, now that we're married, you know, once I establish my career, or once the kids are grown, once, you know, whatever milestone happens, that's once I finish school, that's when I can, that's when I'll start focusing in on the relationship. You know, so one is saying almost now that I've hit this milestone, now I can relax and I don't need to try as much. The other one is saying, I don't need to try as much until I get to this, this milestone. And I think that it's a dangerous idea that once you're married, or once your children have moved out, or once you finish project X, Y, or Z, and you've achieved, It's a dangerous idea to feel like, okay, I'm going to achieve something, or I have achieved something. And so there's almost an excuse at some point to really not invest within the relationship. And I do believe it is this specific idea that leads to couples breaking apart due to lack of care. I mean, Heather, I mean, I don't know how many times you've heard it. I know I can't even count how many times I've heard it. Like the story of, well, I thought I was providing and I would go to work really hard, or, you know, I was so focused on the children and what they needed. And I thought that things would be fine. We would be okay until this all settled down and I didn't need to focus so much on the rest. I mean, you're nodding your head because how often we hear that very same story. And I feel like this is just plain wrong. And, you know, of course, by the time people get to us, they realize their mistake. But what this gets to, you know, what this leads to is, it leads to a partner feeling put out, neglected, unimportant, uncared for, unloved. Because the truth is, when this is happening, if someone is waiting to work on the relationship until after a specific event, or perhaps you are dropping off your effort after a certain event, basically you're specifically making something else a priority over the person that you love. Whether you say that, you know, you're early on in the marriage, you say, okay, we're married now and I don't need to try as hard. You're putting your own comfort and your own ability to relax over the, you know, the needs of the person that you love, or you're putting your career or the kids over the person that you love. And I don't, just that kind of priority list will inevitably lead to problems in the relationship. I don't know about you, Heather, but if I felt like my wife, Jen, if she told me that the kids were more important than I was, that would hurt. That would really cause some problems. It would cause some damage to my self-esteem. It would cause some damage to my ability to connect with my spouse. But I hear these specific words sometimes and when I'm talking with clients. I mean, it's when we do this, I hope you all can imagine, like, maybe someone saying to you, your spouse saying to you, okay, I love you, but my career is more important. I mean, it would just plain hard to feel like that you were less. And yet this is what is being left unsaid in many circumstances, but what is ultimately being felt. Even in long-term relationships, ones that have been through many ordeals, in my opinion, need constant nourishment and attention. And I think, Heather, you would agree with me that one of the reasons why our respective relationships with our spouses does well is because we do have this constant nourishment and we have our relationship as a main priority in our lives. Would you agree?
Right. And there's a comment here. We both definitely put kids above everything else. And I get that. Sometimes we're so busy trying to stay on top of things that we never get to the bottom of things. And sometimes we think that we're doing the right thing by building up our big successful career and that that's going to get us everything that we want. And we don't realize that along the way, we've neglected our relationships. The law of focus is that what we focus on grows. Imagine like a magnifying glass. You could have a floodlight, right, that just shoots energy everywhere and it just dissipates and isn't very effective. Or you have a magnifying glass that focuses that light. That's like our focus. Whatever we focus on has power. And so if we've fallen into the trap where we've let something else be our focus, then it's time that we re-examine that. And many of you are here. Actually, I would say all of you are here because you know that. We're preaching to the choir here. But it is important that we constantly stay vigilant on that. The enemy of courage isn't cowardice. It's complacency. That's Earl Nightingale. Drop some Earl Nightingale bombs on y'all. And it's beautiful because it isn't the things that we need to be afraid of. It's the things that we become too comfortable with, the things that we become too complacent with. Those are our real enemy. And so we need to be aware of that and make sure we don't fall into those traps.
Actually, I think I've turned it into this positive thing. I will, for me and my family, I specifically will tell my kids sometimes, I'll say, your mother and I, we really love you, but right now we're focusing on each other because I'm going to be honest, our relationship is more important than your needs right now. I've directly said that, and I'll say, but then I'm very careful to also say very similar things to my children. I'll say, hey, look, I know I've been working really hard today, but you are much more important. I'd much rather spend some time with you. So this is why I'm going to be carving aside this time, you know, after work for you. And I make sure that each person within, you know, within my family feels like they are a priority in their own way. And this is, I think, part of what really fights against that complacency and that feeling that, well, of course, where they aren't feeling important. So anyways, unless you have anything further to add with that myth.
One final comment. So question here, what if our focus is our partner and they are focused on everything but us? How do you get past that? Okay, go back to the beginning of this podcast and apply the three foundations.
That's specifically that second one, where are you being true to yourself? Are you being open with your own concerns while also having empathy for where they are and regarding your spouse positively? Even with that comment right there, I will, you know, with that very simple comment, I'm going to say that they're not regarding their spouse positively.
Yeah, their focus is on everything but us. How do you get past that? Yeah. And I'd also say that 99.5% of our clients are in that exact same position, that exact same situation, where you are wanting to get this person back in your life, back in your heart, back in your bed, back in your marriage, back in your life, and have that security, trust, you know, all the happiness. Again, you want that with them and they don't want that. So that's exactly why we've developed this PAC method. And again, I encourage you, if you want more help with this, go to highthrivecoaching.com. We have many programs as well as our coaching program. Just another win to share. We just had our biggest month ever, where we just enrolled more clients than we ever have, which is amazing. We only have actually one spot left as of this exact moment. It changes all the time as our clients graduate and move their lives forward, but it's fabulous. And so we're really excited about that. We've had more people join our PATH course if coaching isn't the best fit for you at this time. So go and check those things out. Those are resources that are available, the very best method in the world to get your spouse back in love with you again and become the best version of yourself. So thank you, Mark. Next week, we're going to share with you our exclusive ceasefire method to stop the damage and heal in your relationship. Thank you, Mark. We'll talk again soon.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.